Welcome to another edition of the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast. Today's episode of the CF Podcast brought to you by our friends at Heartland Flags and heartlandflags.com. The MLB playoffs are set to start this week. College football is officially in full swing. NFL season is weeks in, and we're going to have our winter sports here coming up soon. The NBA preseason is underway. I know that the NHL teams have entered training camp. It is time for everybody to need to get their flag out in front of their house, up in their living room, at your tailgate. It doesn't matter. Get your flags and get them from Heartland Flags and heartlandflags.com. They've got every team, every sport. Seasonal flags, Halloween's coming up, get your house looking nice and spooky, and then before long it'll be time for Thanksgiving and Christmas, and of course it's never too early to start getting your Christmas gifts together, Rob Gray.
Yep.
And flags from Heartland Flags make the perfect gift for anybody on your list. There's something there for everybody. Heartland Flags, heartlandflags.com, the presenting sponsor of the Monday Rundown every week here on CycloneFanatic.com. How's it going, brother? Happy October.
Going well, and happy October to you as well. Hot time to fly my Cubs flag for the playoffs as they are just about to roll into view.
Yeah, it is officially postseason time, but it is also college football time.
Indeed.
And Iowa State coming off a 17-7 loss to Texas last Thursday night. I think just about everything that can be hashed out from that game has been. You know, we've talked a lot about, you know, the defense was good at times outside maybe that first drive that they had. The offense really struggled, but, you know, it's time to move on and look ahead to the Oklahoma Sooners.
Yeah, I think the real positive is the defense, and, you know, it's been hashed out every which way till Tuesday or whatever the saying is about David Montgomery not getting enough touches. I think we can all agree that, you know, in Texas, that vowed to stop him from being, you know, they that's how they lined up. You know, they loaded the box most of the time. They blitzed a ton, and Jacob Park didn't have his best game, nor did the offensive line. But defensively, Campbell touched on today just how they were able to put in multiple, you know, become more multiple with the extra practices leading up to that. And you could see that, and how refreshing to see linebackers like Joel Lanning and Marcel Spears lead the team in tackles, and I think that's going to be a season-long thing versus D-backs.
Yeah.
Leading the team. I mean, it tells you everything about the defensive lines getting up blocks better and redirecting running backs better and redirecting plays better, and you've got really good linebacker play and really good support on the back end. So really good things from the defense still. I think that's much more of an outlier than a trend-setting type thing for the offense. I think that was just a confluence of bad events where a lot of things, you know, they could get it going a little bit. Got that Coach Campbell's mentioned today, they got across the 56 times, but just sputtered there, couldn't. And again, that's a really good Texas defense too, post Maryland season opener. But yeah, a lot of things came together. It culminated to make that a really frustrating game from the offensive side of things. But you know, none of the players were down, which is a positive. It doesn't do any good to stew in it when you know you left a big opportunity out there on the field. So, yeah, the daunting challenge ahead with Oklahoma's offense in particular, but pretty darn good Sooner defense, too, outside of the Baylor game where they gave up 41.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was just going to say is I think that, you know, this Oklahoma offense is obviously going to get a lot of the pub. They're putting up, you know, a lot of points. You know, put up a lot of points on the road at Ohio State in a pretty big time win. One of the best offenses in college football. That defense is good, but I still think that there's some room to move the football on them. You know, and this isn't. I mean, I know I said that about Texas too, but I think that Texas front seven,
yeah,
is really damn good.
And it's better than I thought it was.
Yeah, and yeah. I still think that I still think Iowa State could have moved the. And I think that I honestly think that's what's so frustrating for fans is that. In past years when Iowa State would lose a game like that, it was because, okay, we just didn't have enough talent to win that game.
Yep.
They had enough talent to win the game, but I don't think they had the right plan for the talent to be able to put themselves in the right positions to win the game. Does that Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, I mean, plan and execution.
Yeah.
I think of the back-to-back throws down the sideline to Alan Lazard that Park overshot him on both times. You're in single coverage. That's exactly what you want. It is the right call by Tom Manning to try to exploit that. Mm-hmm. Park just didn't execute the throw properly. You hit on those plays. You're inside the 10-yard line, or who knows? Alan sheds a tackler, and you score a touchdown. I mean, so many different dynamics that can turn on single plays, and then, you know, Park maybe gets in his head a little bit. Man, why did I miss that? You know,
and
we know how much he cares. We know how he strives to be perfect. And I think sometimes that can come back to bite you when things start sliding the other way. Big to see how he responds in this game in Norman.
And obviously, I mean, you don't know how this would be different. They scored on the next possession, but there is the play where, you know, you get the interception by Kamari Cotton-Moya. You try to throw the fade down the left sideline, and Matt Eaton can't come up with a catch.
It was right there.
A beautiful throw by Jacob Park. Yep. He's not just not quite able to make the catch, and that puts you in the red zone, first and 10, with a, if nothing else, if you don't turn the ball over, you're getting a field goal there.
Yep.
You know, and that just continues to build some momentum for your offense, which – it didn't make that big a difference. They got the ball back a couple, you know, I think they got a three and out, got the ball back, and ended up scoring on the next drive. But it still was just, it could have gotten that momentum for the offense to say, build off of that interception by Kamari Cotton-Moya, and, you know, you just get the ball rolling a little bit earlier, and it's just a little bit more, you get a chip in Texas's armor a little bit earlier on in the football game to where you can put yourself in a position to get yourself back into it and maybe get in position to win. And, you know, there was a few plays like that where it's just like, yeah, the offense didn't play very well, but there were still opportunities. And I think that, that it sucked. Like, the offense just wasn't very good, but it's still encouraging to see, because there was a lot of years where they'd never even had an opportunity to get themselves back into a game.
And so crucial to get points off of turnovers too. Like you said, they did come back and score finally shortly thereafter, but that's a deflating thing, you know, for both the offense and the defense, and of course the fan base, when you get that turnover in prime territory and you just can't get it done on a drop like that. And that's when when a guy's struggling, you need someone to pick him up. And I think that was touched on after the game. I mean, that's, I think, what these guys strive to do. Unfortunately, there just wasn't enough of that on Thursday night.
And I think that, if you look back at it, 10 of Texas's points come off of turnovers. Mm-hmm. You know, you give them short fields, they get a field goal, they get a touchdown out of that, and then all of a sudden a game that was a 7-point game is a 17-point game, and it's like, okay, well, yeah, you know, this is just it. And when as good as Texas's defense was playing, it felt like about 30 points to come back from down 10. But like I said, I think that the defense played well. You can take a lot out of that for Iowa State's defense. Joel Lanning, obviously, being the biggest bright spot, 20 tackles. And then the offense, there's just a lot that you can build on. There's things that I think that the coaching staff looks at and they're going to be able to learn from, and you move forward on it, and you don't have any time to dwell on it because you have a huge game coming up this week against a really good team.
Yeah, exactly. And I think to your point on Oklahoma's defense, well, they gave up 16 to Ohio State. I can't remember who they played otherwise, the nobodies. You know, obviously, they limited them to nothing. Baylor came back solely with the passing game, I think. And I think that's one thing you can look at and say, can you exploit that a little bit with the Sooners? Now, I thought you could exploit that maybe with Texas, given how strong I thought their front seven were. But they just had a great game plan defensively. You know, they were going to load the box, and then they were going to pressure Park like crazy at the same time.
That defense is good. I wouldn't be at all surprised if they end up beating Oklahoma.
Yeah, speed and size. I mean, those guys have put it together since the Maryland game. But I like I said, I think that performance by the offense is an outlier. Park hits like we know he can in this game. In a weird way, I think there's less pressure in this game. Oklahoma's that huge 26-point favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, pressure, quote-unquote pressure, what does it mean? But, I mean, when you have Texas come into your house, even though they're unranked and they're 1-2 at the time, I think there's a tendency to really want to maybe get a little bit too hyped up about it.
Yeah.
And I think that might have been the case, again, just speculating that way. And in this case, you just go and let it all hang out. How many times did we see in some of those 3-2-win teams? How about the game Joel Lanning had at Baylor? Off the bench, you know, Baylor's up big, and then all of a sudden Iowa State's scoring at will, and that was a mismatch kind of game talent-wise. But the right guys, the key skill players, you know, found a way to pull out and just have fun playing football. And I think that's what this game has to be about. Just go out and have fun playing football and let it all hang out. And I think it could be a really entertaining game. I don't see them getting blown out. But, again, how reliable am I? I had them winning by 3 over Texas. But, you know, it's hard to forecast. But I just think it's going to be a pretty good turnaround for the offense here.
Yeah, for sure. And we were just doing some research, looking at the last time that Iowa State beat Oklahoma, 1990, when the Sooners were the number 16 team in the country. Larry Coker, the offensive coordinator under Gary Gibbs there for the Sooners.
Yeah. I just turned 21.
Yeah.
The previous March. I was probably having a lot of fun that weekend. I mean, no one saw that coming. I mean, the Sooners were so highly rated, as you noted, they couldn't participate in the postseason because they'd been put under some sanctions by the NCAA. But an 8-3 team had a 3-game skid in there, a 1-point loss to Texas. Then who'd they lose?
They went from the top 5 to unranked in 3 games, including with losses to Texas, Iowa State, and a number 10 Colorado team that won might have been the co-national champions.
Yeah. So a really good team, an unheralded Cyclones team rolled in there and shocked them.
Yeah.
It's in their stadium. So
I guess my point with that is that you never know. I mean, I'm not saying they're going to go in and win in Norman, but I'm just saying that it's the last time Iowa State beat Oklahoma, I don't think anybody was anticipating them winning that game.
Yeah, I wonder what the spread
was. Obviously, I wasn't alive, but I'm just saying I can't imagine that many people were going into that one thinking, oh, yeah, we're going to win this week.
Yeah. I just wonder what the spread must have been for that game.
That'd be a good where are they now for next year. The last team to beat
people from the 1990 team.
The last team to beat Oklahoma
could do a series of like 4 of the key players in that game or something,
Or even just the game, like have people talk about
I do want to plug the most recent one on Brett Meyer. Great guy, Brett, first of all. And, you know, I'd forgotten just how staggering his numbers were. You know, so many records as Iowa State's quarterback. And, you know, talk about a guy that cared.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just quick aside here, but that 2005 season, which could have been so special, and they just lost 3 games in overtime. 3-point loss in the bowl game. Other than that, one game in which they – kind of let it get away from them completely, but that team could have easily been a 9-10 win team and changes the trajectory of Iowa State football because they were coming back up. I think they won 2 games in 03, then 7-5 in 02 with the bowl win over Miami of Ohio 1 year after Ben Roethlisberger was gone. So still 7-5 season, good season, but really enjoyed talking to Brett and appreciated his time, and he put together some memorable performances for sure.
You always got to give the shout out to the Atlantic Trojan. From the Hawkeye 10.
Indeed. And he took him undefeated to the Class 3A state title after committing to Iowa State and heading off towards his great Cyclone career. But we'll see.
He did lose in Clarinda one time, though.
He did?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that game. They got stopped on the goal line on the final play.
So like Steve McNair in the Super Bowl?
No, it was like a goal line stand. Clarinda had a goal line stand.
Okay.
His time ran out.
So it wasn't like they were completing.
No. It was really. They tried to run like a sneak on the last play at the goal line and got stuffed. Clarinda won. It was back when Clarinda was good. When Adam Carper was on the team.
We know Oklahoma is really, really, really good, and that offense, number 1 in the nation total offense, 605.5 yards. Mayfield just crushing it in efficiency. Number 1. By far in the Big 12 and leading the nation. Mm-hmm. You got a running back, who is it, Adams, I think.
They replaced I think that this is the Lincoln Riley factor of it, is they had a lot to replace on that offense. 2 top running backs, Mixon and Perine. Obviously, the receiver. What was his name?
Why can't I think of it? I'm totally blanking.
Yeah, he went to the... He was the Biletnikoff Award winner.
Yeah.
He plays for the Jaguars now.
Why am I... forget it. But either way...
They had a lot to replace, and they're still really good.
Yeah,
that's the point.
You plug and play those skill players. Abdul Adams, 10.3 yards a carry.
Yeah.
He has a 99-yard run. Trey Sermon. These are guys we didn't hear about last year. He's got 3 touchdowns, 6.6 yards a carry. You know, Mayfield can do stuff with his feet as well. But just a juggernaut of an offense, no doubt. But
D.D. Westbrook.
That's right. gosh, I don't know why I'd forgotten.
I kept thinking Sterling Shepard, but that was a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So I was just like, "There's see the all these good Oklahoma receivers. They just run together." So yeah, but yeah, okay. That's the, I'm just saying they had a lot of weapons replaced, obviously, around Baker Mayfield, and they're still pretty damn good,
crushing it. Yeah, I mean, just 605 yards a game when you've played at Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's usually going to bring your average down.
And it's crazy to think that they did that at Ohio State, and yet Baker Mayfield is still not – I mean, he's obviously in the Heisman conversation, but they're still he's still kind of fallen back a little bit with what Saquon Barkley's been able to do over the last couple weeks.
Yeah, that's true. We'll see how that evolves based on how the teams perform. But, yeah, Mayfield's been as good as you could expect, just so efficient, and then the explosiveness. And then that offensive line, as Coach Campbell said today, is probably going to be the best they face this season. So a great test for that defensive line that's been building behind Ray Lima, consistent performances from Vernell Trent, Jaquan Bailey, great edge rusher, and you know, outside of the unfortunate penalty that allowed that first drive to continue. I mean, this defense is playing really, really, really good football. And now, is Texas a great offense? No. But
well, and something that's encouraging to me is that we saw, you know, obviously a really good Oklahoma offense a year ago come into Jack Trice Stadium, and John Haycock put together a really nice plan to be able to slow that offense down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they obviously still put up 34 points, but
they gave the offense a chance.
Right.
They weren't able to score enough.
Yeah, and that defense did a nice job of being able to slow them down for the most part for a lot of that game. And I think he did a nice job of being able to bring some different blitzes that maybe they hadn't seen. That was something that I know Tom Herman said after the game on Thursday night was, you know, they'd watched every Matt Campbell game for 2 years since he came to Iowa State, and there were blitzes that they and pressures that they brought that they had not ever seen on film. So I think that that's a testament to what John Haycock and his staff have been able to do defensively, is where they're starting to add in some new wrinkles with this defense. They've got some new options that they can utilize that maybe they'll be able to put together something here to slow down this Texas offense.
Exactly.
Or not Texas, Oklahoma.
Yeah, and that's what's impressive, maybe most impressive. And also the players that can adapt to that quickly. You know, yes, you get a couple extra practices because of the off Saturday before, but to be able to show multiple looks that are different, to be able to move guys around in different ways, maximize, you know, what each player has on that defense, you know, that was a really impressive aspect of Thursday, and I'd look forward to seeing that that continue. And if they can you know, stymie Mayfield a little bit, you know, not let the running game get away from them, which they haven't let happen all year. I think it could be an interesting game. I don't foresee a blowout, which we've seen so many times during this 18-game losing streak against the Sooners. Not last year. I mean, they hung in there. What, lost by 10?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they kind of had a chance. It just not enough play. Kind of reminiscent of
It was no Samaje Perine come in and run for 7 million yards like he did in whatever it was, 2013 or 14.
Exactly.
All right, what else we got? Was there any other news from the press conference that we needed to mention?
Kenny Nwangwu.
Oh, yeah. Kenny Nwangwu back participated in practice for the first time fully on Sunday. No contact, I don't think, but should be a final decision here on him coming the next couple weeks.
Yep.
I'd still be surprised if he plays this season.
I would be as well, but it's encouraging to see that he's back out there and, you know, hopefully, you know, getting to full strength and then think about what you've got next season with him in the fold.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's it, isn't it? I can't think of – Josh Mueller is now the right guard position.
Yeah, because Ogie is probably
– out until at least late in the season, which I don't think is a surprise to anybody.
No.
I think that's it. I can't think of anything else.
Yeah, just look forward to an 11 a.m. kick on Saturday and we'll go from there.
Yeah, I will push – Saturday morning, we are having a game watch at Whiskey River in Ankeny. I know Casey has all kinds of fun stuff planned for that. So come on out, hang out with us, watch the game. Should be a good time. Of course, we'll have our normal podcast schedule all throughout the week. As far as I know, I don't know of anything that should be keeping that from happening. And of course, get on, read Rob Gray's Where Are They Now feature on Brett Meyer on the front page of the Cyclone Fanatic website right now. Thanks, brother, for coming in and doing the pod.
Thank you, my man.
And we will talk to you guys tomorrow. CFTV Live, 10:45 in the morning. I have a feeling that Jeff Woody will come in nice and fired up and ready to talk about Iowa State's loss to Texas. Thanks for tuning in to the Heartland Flags Monday Rundown, and I'll talk to you soon.